Session number 5868, Horton Mundi, part 25.
On the other side of this tape, I told you that the boss would take me to a nearby town to see a doctor because I'd got something in my eye that flew off of that emery wheel where I was working in the sawmill. And waiting in the waiting room, there was quite a large number of people, and the surgery was different there to what it is in England. Instead of going in individually to see the doctor, they went in small groups. Well, now, when it came to my turn, I went in with a group of four women and myself. Well, do you know, I was hellishly embarrassed, but they didn't take a bit of notice, these German women, one or two young. They took no notice whatever. I think they had a bit of a giggle to see how embarrassed I was, but that didn't matter. They went before the doctor. He went through the old routine, you know, whatever they do, and didn't matter whether they got headache, toothache, bellyache, arseache, it didn't matter what it was. They went right through it, and oh, blimey, I stood there. But they all had the same complaint, no doubt about that, and they all had the same remedy. That was, they had, really speaking, they had no grub, they were half starved, they got no food. Well, the remedy for each one was exactly the same. A prescription, put it that way, for more milk. Each one had the same, more milk, more milk. And then when it came to me, I thought, oh, well, surely I don't want milk. But no, that's only kidding. Now, when he looked at me, the old boy, the boss had took me, because he knew before I went in that I'd had something in my eye. Now the doctor sat me in a chair, had a look, and he said, there's nothing in your eye. He said, that'll be all right. He said, except that it may have been bruised or cut or something. And he said, I'll put some drops in and that should do you. Well, he had a go at that, the whole hell. Every time a drop come down, I kept shutting my eye. I think he got just a little bit angry. I forget. At the finish, he cut out my eyelid. He held it back tight and swilled a lot in. He says, I'll put you right. And it did. Well, now, we went back again. The boss took me back. We went back again. And now, to carry on from that, in that little fitting shop that I was in, it was a lovely little job, nice, cosy little job. Sharpening saws, oh, ever so happy there. And this boss, that was the boss's son, really, he was a middle-aged chap, around about 40. And I know he'd got no time for the war at all, because he'd spent all his life over in Brazil. And every day he'd come there and sit down and we'd have a chat and talk about things, and he thought a hell of a lot of the British people. He thought quite a lot of them. There was none of this hatred or anything. He thought a lot of them, because when we, he'd tell me the tale about Brazil, and he'd already met different British people out there, and he thought a great lot of them. Now, during some of the conversations, all sorts of things cropped up. I'd sometimes give him a fag. Well, now, that was one thing all us chaps never did at all, was to flog a fag. We never flogged any cigarettes or tobacco. But other things, as I've told you in previous tapes, I used to flog it for a bob or two, you know what I mean. And never a cigarette. Now, I always remember he said to me once when we were smoking a fag, he said, do you know, he said, these have got opium in them. I said, opium? I said, no. Because they were the real Virginia tobacco in the cigarettes in those days. But that's the first time I'd ever heard it mentioned as having opium in. In fact, if that was so, I've been smoking opium now, oh hell, 70 years, boy. But anyway, it ain't affected me a lot so far. Well, now, we talked about all sorts of things. He told me what he'd done in Brazil, and how, because he got a big job there, I could tell that, a consultant engineer for bridge building, all sorts of construction work. And he said to me, he said, the day the war's finished, he says, I'm getting a boat and go straight back. He said, I'm not staying here to run this mill. His old dad was still alive. He said, I'm not staying. He said, I'm off back there. He said, that's the life for me. And he told me that every so often in Brazil, they used to have holidays, you know, on his job, perhaps a month at a time. And he used to tell me how he used to go out shooting and that, you know, wild animals and all that. And what all the fun he had at that game. And then he said, now when the war's over, he said, will you come back with me to Brazil? He said, I'd love you to come back with me, he said, because I have quite a lot of business with the English people. He said, and if you'll come back with me, he said, you can be interpreter for me so that we can knock about together. He said, I'll find you a jolly good job if you'll come back. I said, oh, well. I said, we'll see. Anyway, I said, leave it at that. Well, now I carried on there, and that was a jolly good little job. And after a time, he said, now, how if you come and live down here in this mill? I said, be all right. Now, he took me up into this new mill that I was building, and at the, on the second floor at the end, there was a small room, and it had got a kitchen stove in it, you know, for cooking and all that. And he said, I'll tell you what, he said, if you'd like to come here, instead of living and sleeping at the lager, he said, I'll fit you up, he said, and I said, oh, I'd love that. Well, that's what he did. Fitted me a bed in there, the stove was there. I went back to the lager, I fetched all my kit and the box, because we all had wooden boxes then to lock our stuff in, you know, parcels. I've got plenty of powerful stuff, so I brought me box down, I settled there and lived there. Now that was a blooming good going on. Now I settled there nice and comfortable. Well now, you heard me, heard me talk about my old flame, Minna. Well now, I didn't see much of her after I left the snob shop. Except when I was going down to work or back from work at the end of perhaps there in the village and just wave, and we sort of parted, if you know what I mean. Well now one day that little place, that little workshop that I was in, that little room used to come level with the street outside, you know, where I sharpened my saws and that, this little workshop. And one day, I heard a hell of a banging on the window, I looked out and it was Minna. So evidently she wanted to see me again. Well, I opened the window and I told her, I said, it's no good, I said, too risky. But anyway, after that, we met a time or two around there's a hell of a lot of stacks of timber. You know, after they come out the mill, they were stacked hell of all in batches. Anyone that understands the seasoning of timber will know what I'm on about. Well, she'd waddle around and we'd have a natter. And one day she said, will you meet me tonight? I said, I can't get out. You see, the boss there, I had every freedom I wanted, but he told me, so I must lock you in at night. I didn't let you out at night. I said, no, of course not. And outside of this mill, there was a long iron girder stood right out, a long way out. Well, now that was put there for the purpose of in peace time, using it as a flour mill, the lorries would run underneath and they'd unload the flour and run it along on pulleys and drop it into the lorries underneath. Well, there was that hanging out, and I said to Mineral, so I can't get it, it's no good. So then after a few times, I said, there's only one hope at all. I said, I've got a hell of a long rope in the mill, I know that there. I said, now I said, I'll risk it. So we arranged it. I got this rope when it got dark at night. Well, it wasn't really dark, it was half a moon. It was a lovely night. I got this rope and tied it round this girder, let it drop down on the floor, and I waited and I heard Minna call, and I slid down the rope. I thought, I don't know how the hell I should climb all that way back up, but I don't know. Away we went. Now there's no edges along the side of the road there. It's all open roads, open country, and along the side of the road there's a deep ditch, both sides of the road, and we waddled off along the road and went quite some way. We settled down and I thought, oh, getting on very well. I'm going to tell you what, getting on very well. All of a sudden there was, in the half moon, you know, a little bit of light, there was somebody come tramping along the road. I said to Minna, I said, oh, help. She didn't know what I meant. Who's this? So she said, keep quiet. She said, it's the police, the village policeman. I said, oh, hell. Oh, it's that for B spider. When he got level to us, Minna just as usual said, good nomp. So I thought, very hard. I said, good nomp, and the same. Now, whether he knew it was me or not, I don't know, but oh, blimey, my knees shook, because it'd been all over if he'd have reported me. But afterwards, when I got back, I thought, you know, that old bugger knew who I was, because me and him had been fairly telly in the village. I thought, I bet he knew who I was. If he didn't, he ought to have done. Well, we slithered off back to the mill. Now, when I got to the mill, I went again the wall and felt that rope was still hanging there. But I needn't have been frightened before about climbing up it. I reckon I went up that rope quicker than a cat could. Oh, hell, I slithered up that quick, in through that two little doors that opened there, in there, shut the doors, and back, and I was away. But I was in hell of a sweat. But I never heard another word about it. Well, now, that's just a little tale. Now then, back at work. Now, the old Jerry, that chap, we often used to sit and talk about different things, and now it was getting towards autumn, see? Towards the end of the summer, well then, towards the end of the war, actually, as it happened. It was getting autumn time, and things were not going at all well for the Germans. Now, he used to tell me quite a lot about it. In fact, he brought me the daily paper, the Berliner Zeitung. He brought that for me to read. Well, as I told, I couldn't read it, because if you read English newspapers or any newspaper, how to pronounce a word is vastly different how it's written, so it were no good to me, I couldn't follow it. But anyway, he used to bring it and then he'd point out into it in different paragraphs, different things. Now, the way we went on together, we'd think we were two mates. He was nice, that was a nice bloke. And he told me then that things was going very, very bad for him. But in the village, the people in the village, they didn't seem to know anything. They didn't discuss anything. I don't think they knew. Couldn't have done. But they didn't ever say anything. But he kept me wired up to everything that was happening. Well, now, after a time, it began to show. There was, first of all, you noticed that when there was odd one or two soldiers came home on leave or came finished or deserted, put it which way you like, they used to have a little red button on the front of their round cap, round hat. Oh, Jerry's was a flat round hat. And on the front was a little red tab button thing. Well, now these that was in the village then, just odd one, there might have been two, I spotted, they'd cut that off. Well, now it didn't take long to realise, well, he told me what it was. There was a revolution started in Germany then. Well, shortly afterwards, as history will tell you, the Kaiser just abdicated and went to Holland and finished his life in Holland. That was the end of him, but that had started then. But the villagers didn't seem to know anything whatever about it. And that carried on ever so quiet for some time. Now the Russians in the mill, in the sawmill, I had very little to do with. Well, I had no cause to. All I used to have to do was to go and change the saws in the machines that they was using, but I couldn't hold conversation with them because I didn't know their lingo and none of those there spoke German, so I was really at a loose end. But I used to get on all right with them, wander around when one of the machines or the saws wanted sharpening, they'd come to that little room where I was sharpening them and asked me to change it. Well, I used to change them and sharpen it for them, but I had no mixing with them at all. Because end of each day, you see, they was all marched off together back to their lager, which was the other end of the village, so I really had no freedom at all. Now, this boss, he still used to come and talk to me, sit and have a chat. Well, I think it used to amuse him. He used to like to hear a lot about, you know, the routine in Britain and so forth, and he used to tell me about Germany and that sort of thing. We had quite a lot of talk, and I remember one day he said to me, he said, you know, he said, you and I should never be fighting each other. He said, if you go back through history, he said, you yourself's a German. And of course, when you look back through history, it is almost so, because the Anglo-Saxons, we came from the Anglo-Saxons. Well, the time went on and it was now beginning to get towards the end of autumn into October time, and the weather was beginning to get a bit colder. But up in that room where I was, I'd got the old stove there, plenty of wood. I kept nice and warm and comfortable every night. My old cooking pans and that, and my food, I were doing very nicely. But it had to come. And he told me one day, he said, well, he said, it won't be long now before it's all over. And in the village, they still say they knew nothing, didn't seem to know anything. None of our chaps knew anything, and the Russians, they never knew anything. And then one day, a bit later, he come into that place where I was, he said, well, he said, you can say it's finished. He said, now you go up into the village, take a walk up, have a look in the post office, he said, and you'll see a telegram in the window. So I went off, I'd got quite a free laugh. I went off up in the village, round to the post office, and I always remember that telegram. In written in German, of course, and I can remember it. Now it was, Der Krieg ist fertig. Um der Schützengraben. Now, translated, that means the war is finished in the shooting trenches. Translated. Well, that didn't say the war was all completely finished. It just said that the war had finished in the trenches in normal terms. But of course, as the boss told me then, he said, you need where it's all over. He said, they're all packing in. And it was so too. Well, now, as soon as I read that, I made a dive then back into the lager where our chaps was, and I told them, I said, it's finished. And these Russians in there and French and Romanians didn't know. I said, yes, I said, it's certainly finished. And, oh, well, we had a good old shouting match and so forth. And that's how it ended up. Well, now, they never told us. The postman in charge never told us it was finished. Not for some time after that. Well, now, after a few days, we was all called back into the lagers. That was the one we was in, and the one that all the Russians was in the other end of the village. We was all called back and told definitely that the war was over. Well, now, the old postman, he sent for me, called me in his office. He said, now, he said, I don't know how long it will be before you go. He said, but you British will certainly go first. You'll go back to the main camp at Eelsburg. But he said, if you like, care for it, he said, you British chaps can go down in the village and have a night out at the pub if you want to. I said, oh, bloody hell, don't want to. All right, that was good. So away we went, we all went down to this village pub. Oh, and we had a hell of a night. Because we got plenty of money, got loads of money. For the simple reason, as I told you on earlier tapes. Quarter pound tin of cocoa, 10 marks. Penny tablet of soap, 10 marks. So I mean, we weren't short, what was a little bit of fiddling, as I told you on earlier tapes. So we were no way short of money and drink. That was snaps and beer. It was as cheap as dirt. So we had a good old do down there. Well, the village, later in the evening, the villagers come down, heard us having a sing-song and that. They come down and we were singing and dancing in the street. We had a hell of a night. Enjoyed it beautiful. Well, the next day, I went back down to my old show down at the mill where I'd worked in that sawmill, and I told the boss, I said, well, we're all called back. I said, so I've come to collect me box of where I kept me food, parcels and all that in. So he took me indoors, took me in his house to him, his father, I forget now whether there was a woman there or not, I forget. But anyway, when we was in there, he said to me, he said, now look, he said, will you change your mind and come back with me to Brazil? I said, no, I said, I thought it over, I said, no, I want to go home. I was single, of course. I said, I want to go home. I said, I think I'd rather go home. He said, well, he said, if you won't come, he says, when I go back, he said, and I should go back to Brazil on the first boat that I can find. He said, and when I'm going down the channel back to Brazil, I should get on deck and I should wave me hand to England and think of you. Now, I thought that was blooming good, wasn't it, for a prisoner of war. Now, you've heard many and many of my tales about my life during those 20 months of prisoner of war. Now, I told you then that I went from a tramp to a king. Now, you know what I mean by that, and I think I've proved it, because I was in a position then at the finish, as I've said before. The average German would have loved to have changed places with me. Well, now, all being well, on the next tape that I make, I'm going to make another one, all being God willing. I'm going to tell you then what I've said before on earlier tapes, that I don't believe that there was ever such a thing as a hero or a coward during that war. Now on the next tape, God willing, I'll try and describe to you the reasons why I think so.